Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I'm really excited to be sitting down with Dr. Josh Allison, who is the medical director and co-creator of Unique Expeditions, which provides sort of remote medical training to explore the wildernesses of the world whilst learning new skills. So I'm really excited to have you on today, Josh. Thank you so much for reaching out and coming on. Would you like to introduce a bit more about yourself, what Unique Expeditions is about, and what you do?
Sure, yeah. Hey, Alex, and thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure getting to know you as well. So, as you say, I'm Josh Allison. I am an A&E registrar in the busy emergency centres, emergency departments and trauma centres in London, as well as being a freelance expedition doctor, and I take the lead on Unique Expeditions remote medical training. So we spend a lot of time in the wildernesses of the world, jungles, deserts, Arctic, up mountains, and we teach people how to look after casualties or how to prevent casualties and also how to look after casualties in these kind of really remote and really extreme and super fun places.
That sounds really exciting. Obviously, it differs significantly to what our listeners are used to, you know, the pre-hospital being on an ambulance or maybe that's in A&E. What then is expedition medicine? What does it comprise of? What do we need to expect?
Yeah, well, you know what? You say that like it's a different thing to the pre-hospital medicine, but I think it's just a continuation. It's the sort of pre-hospital, isn't it? It's before you guys with in your ambulance or your helicopter with a bit of a team around you, maybe a bit of obviously not as much equipment and as not as much support in the team as you're going to have if you're in a hospital or a bigger center. But the level before then is your, you know, remote medicine. There's a real overlap. People say expedition medicine, people say wilderness medicine. There's a big overlap, extreme medicine as well. There's a big overlap between all of these things, but it's the step before that when you really, you don't have an ambulance and you don't have the helicopter, and maybe you're the only medic on that team. Maybe you don't have a partner to work with. So, you know, the possibilities of things that are involved in that are really pretty endless. There's things like research science. So you might be tasked with taking a group of scientists into a very remote place, and they're going to have lots of heavy equipment that they want to get there. And then you want to make sure you're keeping them safe. Things like sport and adventure tourism. Lots of people want to climb big mountains or go to, you know, really, really remote parts of the world. And that team needs to be kept safe as well. Weird things like TV and documentaries and record attempts, you know, all of this is this kind of remote medicine. And then you've got moving into the world of kind of like disaster response, humanitarian medicine as well, very resource poor settings in remote places. Yeah, I think that's a lot of the things. What else can I think? Charity. Lots of people want to do something tough, do something difficult as part of a charity or a race to raise money for their causes. So there's this really, really broad, the possibilities are very broad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're finding a lot of people nowadays, especially in the paramedic side of things, because there's that regulation. A lot of people are able to now go and do these things as a paramedic working in expeditions and something that wasn't necessarily super common back in the day. But now it's becoming a lot more common. We're seeing a lot more paramedics getting involved and doing these expeditions, which is really exciting. Obviously, like you said before, some of the challenges that might arise are things to do with that resource poor environment and, you know, being quite isolated. What would be some of those extra challenges that you do face in these unique settings, and how have, you know, you and your personal experience and through your courses do you teach to overcome these?
Yeah, I mean, challenges, it's obviously a challenging environment. It's hard enough when you have a casualty and you've got a team around you in a, you know, I work in a resus department, trying to give a really high level of care, and then you put yourself on the side of a mountain. Your fingers are cold. You've only got what you're carrying on your back, and that doesn't include, I don't know, oxygen or whatever the thing is that you need in that particular situation. And the people that are there helping you may not have any medical training, or maybe just, basic medical training, or maybe the medical training that you provided them at the start of that expedition. So yeah, certainly a challenging environment. But you know what? I teach a lot of people, and paramedics are I mean, I'm going to say the best because I'll offend someone, but they are so good in these kind of situations because that's kind of what you're used to. You get your, anesthetic doctor or your A&E nurse, and we're kind of used to, without training, obviously, in these environments, we're used to working as part of a bigger team. But paramedics are really good at just, getting on with it, working out what they've got, making the decisions quickly, and making the decision to often to evacuate to somewhere where we do have definitive care, and making that happen. So the skill set in, that you get from your training and your experience is really actually valuable. And I'd often have a paramedic on my team over other professions, depending on experience, obviously. But yeah, the challenges really do come around that resource poor setting, and you don't know, you can't carry everything. Sometimes you don't even know what you're going to have. You turn up in country and you have a shopping list of things that you need to get, because obviously you can't take, oxygen cylinders on a plane, for example. You can't take them all there. Well, not easily anyway. Certain medications, certain drugs, you'll struggle to get through customs in certain countries, so you have to try and acquire these things in country. So you sometimes turn up and you might be working for an organization that says, yeah, no, we've done this 1,000 times there, we'll give you the medical kit, and you turn up and it's a bag full of paracetamol. All of these things are the kind of things that we come across all the time. They might say, no worries, you can't take oxygen into the country, we'll provide you oxygen, and they plonk you down some oxygen, and if you don't check it, you'll realize that it's empty, because an empty oxygen cylinder is much lighter to carry, and there's no face mask, or maybe there's a face mask but it doesn't connect to the oxygen. All of these kind of little things that you learn after doing many, many expeds. And those are the little secrets that we kind of, well, me and my amazing instructors, and all the credit goes to just having an awesome team of people with loads of experience that are just basically sharing that knowledge with everyone that we teach.
Absolutely. That sounds really interesting. I could never imagine just rocking up to another country and just be giving a bag of paracetamol and figuring out what to do from there. But sounds interesting,
I'm
to
sure
say
it'll
the
happen.
least.
I'm sure you'll get to do it at some point, and then you can figure out how to fix that problem.
Sounds exciting. Look, throw the challenges at me. It's great. But like you said, so there are these challenges, and paramedics are equipped with dealing with these sort of things most of the time, because that is pre-hospital medicine, is trying to figure out the best course of action with what you've got in the environment that you're in. What are some of the characteristics then that you require, or you find in people that come along in courses, or who you've worked with, that they really do require these things to be good at expedition medicine?
Yeah, well, so I always think of expedition medicine. I'm a simple person, and there are two bits to it. There's the expedition bit, and then there's the medicine bit. So the expedition bit is, there is no point you being in that environment if you're the weakest link, essentially. So if you're on a mountain expedition, which involves some mountaineering skills and some altitude, and you are not comfortable in that environment, you've never been there, you're not used to the cold, you've never experienced altitude symptoms, AMS, and all of the things that come with AMS, being acute mountain sickness, and all of the things that come with that. So rope work and using ice axe and crampons, all of these things, those kind of skills that come with the expedition, environmental specific skills, are so important. And that's actually the thing that, from my experience, people are lacking, that sign up to, absolutely, I'll come along and be the paramedic medic on that jungle expedition. That'd be amazing. Great. Have you been to the jungle? No. So these are the kind of those skills and those abilities. And then there's the medical ability, which is a bit different. And the medical side of it being, yes, you need to be able to function within your professional scope, which would be usually with a team around you, but then you've got, again, the environmental specific skills around that. So things like, if you're at altitude, do you know how to treat mountain sickness? Do you know how to altitude pulmonary edema, how altitude cerebral edema? Have you seen it 1,000 times before? Can you recognize it if you're in a hot environment? Have you seen heat stroke, heat exhaustion? Can you tell the difference? Do you know when it's okay to carry on? Do you know when it's okay to evacuate, or you have to evacuate? How do how do you cool them down? Do you do it fast? Do you do it slow? All these kind of like specific skills that are kind of medical skills that are beyond your normal kind of beyond the basic, beyond the bread and butter, which would be, common things are common, and all of these kind of things like GP skills. Mental health, massive thing on in all kinds of environments, because it's a super pressured and super tough environment. And then your emergency skills. So anyone can have anaphylaxis anywhere, and it's a lot more difficult treating it when you've got one, you don't have a an auto injector, you've got one syringe of adrenaline and no oxygen. So those kind of skills as well. And then you've got your personal skills, and this goes throughout the whole, the whole thing, which is it really comes down to attitude. You're part of a team, even if that's not a medical team. When you're in these environments, you are part of the expedition team. You can't just be the medic. You can't just come along and be like, I will wait for someone to get sick. You will also probably be the navigator. You're also going to have to pull your weight carrying the kit, or the cameras and TV equipment and whatever it is. You're also going to have to set up that rope over, the abseil down, that you need to bring that extra ability. And when you are in these environments working, which are very stressful, working with a small team of people, the way I always describe this is, you have to be very hard to offend. You can't be a sensitive person. You just have to get on with it, muck in, and have a really like solid, good attitude. And those are the kind of people that you want to be on your team. You want to be that person that, when they're tired and they've got a headache and they're, absolutely knackered and they haven't drank enough water, hand them your bottle of water and they're like, yep, no worries, let's carry on. That's the kind of attitude that really thrives in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I was speaking to someone about this. So another episode, I think it'll be just before this one that comes out, with Sam, and he does expedition medicine as a paramedic, and he was saying that, equally, you've got to be a likable person. You've got to get on with people because, like you said as well, you've got to be able to pitch in and become part of that team. Otherwise, what's the point in having you there, really?
Absolutely. Yeah. I suppose there are some other bits to it. I'm thinking, who's my perfect buddy? Who's my perfect expedition, leader or medic or team member? And there are some other bits. I mean, obviously fitness plays a part, but then that's very environment specific or expedition specific. If you're going to be the camp medic and we need you on the other end of a radio to give us some, fully experienced advice when we are, halfway up a hill. You don't necessarily need as much fitness, but definitely there is a component of your physical ability, kind of resilience and adaptability, because we're not carrying all the kit that we need to. You need to improvise.
No, that's really interesting. And yeah, I mean, adaptability obviously makes sense if you're in the middle of the jungle and you've got someone who's poorly and you need to get them evacuated. What also, obviously, so there obviously are courses that teach you these kinds of things, and obviously you've got unique expeditions. But how do, what would, I know we're kind of veering off, but what would you advise people to start if this is something that interests them, for example? What would you start advising them to look into it and start to gain skills in, especially if they're thinking this is their topic of interest, if they're a student or, a year into the job, or you're just quite early on?
Yeah, no. So again, I'm a simple person, and it all comes down to those two bits, the expedition bit and the medical bit, and the word is experience. If you need to be gaining experience in these environments. If you want to get into wilderness medicine and you really love the look of mountains, the first time you go climb a big mountain, you're not going to be the medical officer in charge of people. You just need to get out there, go find a hill in the UK, find the if it's altitude that you're looking for, find the expedition or a course, or learn to do some mountaineering courses in Scotland. Go to the Alps and get some altitude in Mont Blanc. Disappear off to South America and climb every peak in the Andes. I don't know, whatever's within budget. But like getting experience in those environments, because you, when someone comes along to me and says, "Oh, here's my CV. I'd like to be the medic for this expedition," or so, I'm looking at what they've done before. So whether that is what they've done themselves, as a punter as such, or what they've done as the actual responsible clinician, physician, paramedic, nurse on that, and that's actually an important point. You don't there's around this kind of, do you have to be a doctor? Do you have to be a paramedic? Is your license important? A lot of these medic, the term medic on these trips, that they can be a first aider. Obviously, you come with a lot more skills and ability when you're a paramedic or you have some kind of registration. And then you have a lot more credibility when you've spent a lot of time in that environment and you've seen some pathology, because you don't need to be the doctor on an altitude expedition to see high altitude pulmonary edema, high altitude cerebral edema. Experience AMS yourself, you will. So that's the best way. And then with the medical side of things, obviously going through your training pathway, whichever specialty you're doing. And then, like I said before about those kind of environmental specific things, you're not going to learn that in uni. You're not going to learn about, we don't often see, it's 32 degrees now in the UK, but we don't often see a lot of heat stroke in the UK, but we are at the moment, and we don't get taught about it so much. So those environmental specific things, if you're into tropical medicine, there is tropical medicine diplomas, or even better, go get some experience, go do some humanitarian work, some volunteer work in Africa and see it yourself. If you're into trauma, because this happens, go get some trauma experience. And obviously, come on Unique Expeditions remote medical training course and learn a huge amount, and also get some good networking and speak to people that are already working in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's all fantastic points, and particularly I like the fact, sorry, that you're talking about. If you are interested in these things, start volunteering and getting out and doing these things, network, because as a student, you get stuck into uni and doing your exams and your placement and thinking that the only experience you need is the placement hours that you do, and then once you graduate, you put in your application for a graduate role, whether that be for a state ambulance service in Australia or a trust in the UK, and you go and do your NQP period in the UK or your grad position in Australia, whichever one you may be. And what's interesting is it's becoming more common now is people are starting to ask the question of, what can be done differently and how can you make your experience at uni a bit different to others and gain different understandings about where the job can take you. And I think this is a perfect opportunity because while you're at uni, it's fantastic. You can jump on sort of volunteer opportunities with companies or go to these companies, even if they don't offer, say, a volunteer role, to start networking and gain that experience. There's just so much out there that it's not just necessarily a state ambulance service or a trust that you have to go straight into or be there for the rest of your career, which is it's quite interesting.
Yeah, there are so many options open to you. Once you get that qualification, there really, really are. Some of my most valuable instructors and good friends are paramedics that also do mountain rescue, and I am in awe of what they do and what they can do. A Monday morning, they'll send me a WhatsApp with a picture of what they did at the weekend, and you just think, oh my. That's just what you're doing on a weekly basis. Not even, expedition works often. You'll go on, if you're lucky, two, three, four a year, because they're big things and they last months sometimes. But they are doing that as part of their day job. And the paramedics, I mean, most of them are paramedics because it's perfectly suited to that role. And also my colleagues that work in the RNLI doing that kind of work as well. Again, paramedicine, a lot of paramedics in that. There are so many options open to you. Humanitarian work, going to work for organizations, MSF, I believe MSF takes paramedics as well. Any one of the big charities going to work out at the moment, it's Turkey, Syria, and obviously Ukraine. Really cool things that you can do. And then obviously all the adventure tourism stuff. Do you want to go to Everest Base Camp? Yes, I do. Can you pay for my flights? Thank you. So, there's some really cool stuff that can be done. And you don't have to just think inside the box, as you said. You can open your horizons, and there are so many possibilities.
Yeah, which is really exciting. I mean, it literally puts truth in the world is your oyster, which is quite exciting. Even if it's paramedicine or nursing or whatever it may be, medicine as a doctor, like there's so many options. In terms of that, you brought it up before, but it was about the sort of legal requirements or your scope of practice. Briefly on the last episode, we talked about with Sam about how he managed that. But what is sort of from your perspective as a doctor, and if you do have people that come on as paramedics or nurses, how do people maintain sort of the legal requirements of being medical in a different country?
Yeah, I mean, this is a question, and there's no absolute answer to this. We get asked this all the time, and how does it function? Because there isn't currently a regulating body as such in the UK, and it's different for each profession, isn't it? Nursing, paramedicine, doctors. But essentially, you can do whatever your indemnity insurance provider will allow you to do, and that will probably be it usually goes around, the wording of, do not do anything that you wouldn't do in your normal scope of practice. So you don't go to the side of the mountain and then say, you know what, I don't usually suture people's necks, but today I'm going to put some sutures in someone's neck. That's not an appropriate thing, and they won't indemnify you for that. So as long as you're working within your scope of practice, you can do that outside the country. Now, and your indemnity provider, whichever that will allow you to do that. And I think they're starting to get a little bit of case law coming into the world, which is maybe going to make it clearer, what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. There's also the Good Samaritan law, and I don't know if that's a thing in Australia actually, but it certainly is in the UK. And people think, oh, I can go along. I'm just a member of the team who happens to have a medical kit. And if someone falls over, well, it's the Good Samaritan law and I can treat them. And that's true in the UK. But that's a UK law. It's not the law in all countries. So you have to think, if you're relying on that protection, and you don't have medical indemnity, well, if you're in different countries around the world, that isn't a thing. That's a UK thing. And then you've got the difficulty in if something were to go wrong, and that's what this is about, isn't it? If something were to go wrong and someone was going to try and sue you professionally or personally, would you be safe? Would you be protected? And this is where the case law is starting to come in. So if you are, so say I'm British from the UK, say I'm working in Kenya on an expedition and I've got a client who's Canadian. Well, where are you going to sue me? Are you going to sue me in Kenya because we're in Kenya? Are you going to sue me in Canada because you're from Canada, but my license isn't valid in Canada? My license is from the UK, but I'm working outside of the UK. So a lot of, certainly for medicine, a lot of indemnity providers will say, that's fine. You can go, you can treat everyone around the world, but we won't cover you if you're treating Americans, Canadians and Australians,
Wow.
the three countries which are pretty bad for litigation. So, the question, the answer to the question is ask your indemnity and insurance provider.
Cool. I mean that makes sense, I guess, because if there's no sort of strict or black and white way of doing it, it seems like it is quite grey. Then yeah, that's the best course of action then. So, I guess then we touched on it briefly as well, but you've spoken about some mountain altitude sickness, talked about so like HACE and HAPE and everything. What are some common case presentations that you've had to manage on your expeditions? And yeah, I'd love for some, potentially if you've got some real life stories, if you want to share those, otherwise just some common ones that you've come across.
I mean, the common things are, again, obviously they're environment specific. So you're in the cold. So in the cold, you're going to see hypothermia, you're going to see frostbite, you're in the cold and you've got the snow. So you're getting the reflection off of the snow, so you can get snow blindness. So all of these things are, you know, the common environmental specific things you're going to get. Heat. I mean, heat exhaustion, I don't think we've ever done a jungle expedition where someone didn't come down with heat exhaustion. It's just so common and so easy to avoid if you've been there a few times and you know, you can see the signs and you're coaching and training your team. It's all about pack weight. If you reduce if you're trying to carry, you know, 30 kilograms through a jungle, you're going to overheat. Your muscles are going to generate heat that you can't lose your heat to the surroundings because it's just as warm as you are, and you're going to overheat. So heat stroke, and obviously all of the kind of little bites and stings, and we're always scared about that anaphylaxis in the middle of nowhere, but everything in the jungle wants to eat you or bite you or scratch you or get you infected somehow, some way. So that, I mean, incredibly common, treating little skin infections. Also in the jungle, because it's so hot and so humid, it's bacterial heaven, and nothing wants to heal. So, you know, if you've got another 2 or 3 weeks and you're still heading in instead of coming out, it might, you know, you might be thinking about evacuation sooner than you would think. What else? Yeah, we've talked about the common ones, altitude and deserts. Again, it's heat, but it's a different kind of heat. It's usually a not so humid heat or a not humid heat at all. But often as well, desert expeditions are vehicle bound. So you're thinking what's actually the most common cause in any environment of severe casualty, which is road traffic accidents, vehicle accidents. So all of those things, those are the common and the serious things. What do I want to tell you about in terms of things? I'll tell you one thing that I haven't mentioned that is incredibly difficult to deal with as the medic and a leader as part of the team is it mental health? Maybe it's not mental health. Maybe it's the motivation. So as the medic, you often find yourself, if you're traveling from A to B and you're walking and you've got a heavy backpack on, it's a bit heavier than everyone else's because you've got the med kit in it as well. You often find yourself at the back, and you will have the expedition leader at the front and you're the person at the back. And the people that are struggling more with the physical component, or maybe it's not even the physical, maybe it's the psychological component of being in such a difficult environment, tend to be at the back with you. So you spend a lot of your time motivating people, or as I say, distracting them. So if you can take their mind off the pain in their legs and take their mind off the, you know, the pain in their back and the weight on their shoulders and how hot and sticky and sweaty and uncomfortable they are, and, you know, motivate them, give them belief in themselves, maybe distract them a little bit, and push them on to the end of the day, patch them up and then carry on for sometimes weeks and weeks at a time. You know, people think that truly feel that they can't do it on day one, and then weeks later they're still there and they're doing that. And that is a real skill that I've learned or still trying to learn and over time, because otherwise you lose a member of your team or they really just don't enjoy their experience. And what's the point? You know, that's why we're doing a lot of these things, is for the enjoyment. So maybe that's one of the things I want to mention, that it is a real part of being a team member, but specifically I think the medic on an expedition.
That's really fascinating. I guess it comes back to that ability to gel well with the team and be quite personable and have that ability to build rapport with people and have a chat and get on with everyone.
Yeah, and also everyone has a bad day. Yeah. This is something I've learned. Everyone even the most rugged, feral, capable ex-military, ex-special forces people that I have met who are on expeditions, everyone has a bad day. And one day that will be you. So when you're there and you're the strength for someone else, remember that one day soon, statistically, it will be you. You'll wake up, you feel terrible, your tummy's grumbling, you've got a terrible headache, you've lost, you carried someone else's bag yesterday, so you are just low. And you will need them to help you out as well and bring you up. So yeah, everyone has a bad day.
I feel like today's been a really great overview of expedition medicine and what it entails, and hopefully gives people some ideas who are really interested in this topic and want to get involved in it somehow, giving them something to think about and to go forth and probably hopefully gain some experience, or reach out to people, reach out to yourselves or to others that may be doing this to get them along that pathway. You've obviously got unique expeditions. I'd love for you to go through a little bit about what you guys provide. I know you don't want to fully make it a sales pitch, but obviously you guys have a fantastic company, so we've got to go through that at least a little bit. So what courses do you guys provide? What sort of skills will people gain, and where can they find out more about you?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, just type in Unique Expeditions to whichever search engine that you use, and will come up. Unique Expeditions Remote Medical Training. We started as a bit of a union of military and medicine. So Matt Howells, who's the other half of Unique Expeditions, is ex-military, and we were only doing, I mean, definitely the world's most extreme and challenging medical training in the toughest environments. That was the point. That's why we started doing this. So if you, there's no point trying to be a jungle medic running around in the Lake District. You need to be in a jungle and experience it and feel it, and then try and treat a casualty in that position. Same with mountains and altitude, same with polar, So we were working in all of those environments. We've got our polar course runs way up in the Arctic Circle, gets down to minus 30. You will be standing on 3, 4 meters of snow, digging down to build your shelter for the night. Riding snowmobiles, all of the actual skills that you need in that environment. Same with the jungle, your hammock sleeping. You're not going to be in a nice a nice I don't know, bunkhouse or something. You're going to be in the jungle living it and treating your casualties. Same with mountains and same with the desert. You're going to be in your 4x4. You're going to have some tutorials on how to drive and not break that 4x4, and you're going to pick up all of these skills, proper expedition skills plus the medical skills as well. But then COVID happened and we were sat here. We couldn't go anywhere and we were looking at what to do. So the UK opened up a lot before the world did. So we started two courses in the UK, and we're expanding more and more. So we do a kind of a general expedition and wilderness medicine course, which happens in Wales twice a year. We're run by a very experienced clinician called Daniel Grace, and myself. And that's a bit of a general overview. It's a bit more achievable to get to than Borneo. So, and that is really, really good fun. And the thing that I really enjoy about that is you said the networking, but I just call it friendships. You just meet such awesome, cool, fun people. And that's the instructors who are obviously massively inspirational, but we meet some really cool students. I say students, they're not all students. They might be fully qualified paramedics with years of experience, but students on the course. So that's a really awesome place to kind of cut your teeth. And then we have one in Scotland in the winter, in the Cairngorms, so proper snowy. We always find the snow. It was last year we did it was so blowing a, what do they say in Scotland, blowing a hoolie. Some people got blown off the hill and had to come down, but that's real experience. But using ropes, ice axe arrests, using your crampons, belaying, body belaying with the ropes, digging bucket seats, and all of the expedition kind of things that you need, plus then trying to treat your casualties after you've had to abseil down to them. So yeah, we work in all of those environments. There are other courses around. The only other one I'll definitely mention that's super cool in the UK is an organization called WEMSI, WEMSI, a voluntary course run out of the Cairngorms, Glenmore Lodge in the Cairngorms. Is a very valuable course as well. So that's a really good one. And then there's all the other things around expedition skills. So your mountain leader, definitely a valuable thing to do, in terms of teaching you navigation and all of the other things that are skills that you need, or skills that are certainly very useful in these environments.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's fantastic. I'll pop all those links into the show notes so everyone can just click on those whilst they're listening to the end of this and have a look through. Is there anything you'd like to finalize on that we haven't covered today that you think we're missing?
No, just I mean, just yeah, so enthused about getting people involved. What could be better than using fusing your career and the outdoors? It's just great fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to jump on and have a chat about this. And I do hope everyone who is listening has learned something about expedition medicine, maybe piqued their interest in having a little look at what they can do, and hopefully reach out to yourself and others as well about expedition medicine. So thanks so much for jumping on, Josh.
Thank you so much yourself, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.